start off with the Gemara that's really very much on the, I've always found on the mysterious side. And I'll only address half the mystery today. Half I'll leave mysterious. Maybe another year I'll be zeicha to deal with that mystery. The Gemara starts, Chafala from the Beis and Shabbos. Toner Rabbonu. Mitzvahs Chanukah ner Ishu Beiso. So that means a person has the light, and his whole family is Yotzei with him. Vamahadrin, those that are extra meticulous, is ner l'chol echad ve'echad. Each person in the family lights an air. Vamahadrin min amahadrin, v'shamra yomrim yom rishon madlik. Then there's mahadrin min amahadrin, super mahadrin. It's v'shamra v'shamra yomrim yom rishon madlik shmoyna. You go down. The last night you're lighting one. Hillel Oimrim Yom Rishon Madlich Achas. As we do, we can veilach moisa faholich ikipeik. So, what is the nature of this machloikus of Beishamay and Beishillel? So, the Gemara gives two explanations. Both of them are very difficult to comprehend what the point is. And now my focus is going to be on one. Amar Ula, Pligi bought three Amaroyim. Two Amaroyim in Eretz Yisrael have had a machlekes. What's the pshat in this mission, in this din, this brayse? Bimar. Rabbi Yosi bar Avin, Rabbi Yosi bar Zvido. Chad Amar, time of the Veshame, kineged yomim hanechnosim. The days that are yet to come. So Rashi is kineged yomim hanechnosim. Ha'asidim lova, which are going to come in the future. The time of the Beisalo Kenegad Yomim Hayotzim, the days that have already elapsed, she'yotzu kvar b'zeshu oimibo nimnem ha'yotzim, is counted with the yotzim. According to Beis Shammai, you start with eight, that means there are eight full days to go. So that's fine. You're lighting at the beginning of the eighth day, the night. So there are 8 full days to go. So you want to do Yomim HaNichnosim, there are 8 days. But when Beis Hillel lights, there's no elapsed time yet. The elapsed time is going to, as the Sarat says, where Rashi is concerned. And Rashi says that the lighting is, the Yomim HaYotzim is with the day that they actually lit. It's one explanation. As I said, this explanation is, like, what does anybody want here with this? What's Yom HaNichnosim, Yom HaYotzim, or why should I care about one more than the other? And that should be koveya how we light. Very odd. Then the Gemara gives a Chad Omar, and then one of them, I would say, waxes biblical. He says, time of the Rishama, can I get Poray Achag? As Rashi tells us about Poray Achag, you go start with 13 on the first day, and you go down to 7. Each day it goes down by 1. Well, Beis Hillel's rejoined the retirement of Beis Hillel, the Milan B'Kodesh Rein Moridin. In terms of Kedusha, we ascend, we don't go down. We add. So, the second one I'm going to leave is a mystery. I mean, and that is because Sof Kol Sof, most things in the world, we go up, we don't go down. And usually the Milan B'Kodesh is where it's at. So why? What was the point of the Poray Achag? And why did Beis Shammai decide that that's the appropriate paradigm for Hanukkah? The Gemara does not clue us in. And I'm not going to try to clue you in tonight. That I'll leave as a mystery. The first half of the Gemara is difficult enough. How many days there are left in the Nes? What's the point? What do we want here? So I think one possible perspective of the Machloikas B'Shamli and Beis Hillel that the truth is that they're both in agreement with both Svaros that we're going to have. The only Shaila is which is the one that we have to stress more. Now, Kineged Yomim HaNichnos, rather Yomim HaYotz, must start with Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel haidah that I give to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam is commensurate with the nest that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam does. As the nest grows larger, so the haidah has to grow larger too. So that which I perceive as a smallness demands one level of haidah. As the net gets larger, so it needs a greater and greater hakara, recognition, and a greater and greater praise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu for it. A shevach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the chayra, that's one standpoint. A nest, that's a one-day nest, and an eight-day nest, two different things, totally. This whole event takes place, that it keeps going and going and going and going for 8 days. That demands a bigger haidah. On the other hand, there's a very famous question that Rabbi Saul of Salant asked. He asked it in a different context, but the answer is relevant to us here too. And he had a very simple question, Rabbi Saul. It's interesting, the Balei Musar, you know, take up on it, on his question. Rabbi Saul of Salant said, if I would be the one to make the Jewish calendar, I would have made some changes in it. It wouldn't run the way it runs. And first and foremost, what I would do is that Yom Kippur would take place on Aleph Tishrei and Rosh Hashanah on Yud Tishrei. And he says, L'chayr, that's the Seichel. The Seichel is, we're going to stand in Mishpat before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So why do we have a Mishpat? And then we have to have an appeal. And then when we come to Yom Kippur, hope that somehow we could be Eiker Adin. What do we do with the other way around? Wouldn't it be more sensible? First, we'll have the Yom Slicha B'Kapara, clean the story up. After everything gets cleaned up, then we'll come. Okay, now we're ready for Yom Adin. That would seem to be a more logical way to run our affairs. And yet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'Chochmosai, put Rosh Hashanah first. A very odd thing. And Rabbi Saul gave a teretz that's a Musa teretz to it. And Rabbi Saul said, part of what we have to factor in is not only what's ideally correct, but what works in the human realm. What we might call the perversity of the human personality. And just because something works in the theoretical realm, but in the realm of Olam HaMaisa, it may not work. And he said, we have, Baruch Hashem, a very unique ability to wind up on Rosh Hashanah. We know there's a whole month before to prepare. And we don't prepare. We wind up on Rosh Hashanah. It's almost parachuted down. We hit the ground. Oh, it's Rosh Hashanah. Oh, that's nice to know. So we said, what would happen if we arrived and parachuted down and we woke up and it's Kol Nidre? We wouldn't be in very good shape. So what the Rabbeinu Shel Olam did, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam got our attention. How did he get our attention? The Rabbeinu Shel Olam said, Rosh Hashanah is Yom Adin. Now Yom Adin finished. Now I start to contemplate that. That's not the most comfortable of thoughts. You know, were my affairs in order on Yom Adin? Not quite. So, but the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, now I have 8 days to get ready for Yom Kippur, where my attention is already drawn. As Rabbeinu Yehuda said, a person that would think fully rationally would spend a lot less time in his business and our service in Meitshuva than he does throughout the year, if we would be fully rational. He says, if a person was involved in a mishpat in this world, how much preparation would he do before he went to the mishpat, to hire lawyers and to prepare and go over the testimony and what tainus to use, which claims not to use, etc. A huge undertaking before he goes to trial. And here he goes to trial before the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, which is a lot more complex. In this world, you can game the system sometimes. You move, you suppress certain evidence. you know, it's unconstitutional to bring it in. All different types of shtiklach you can make, which can assist you in succeeding. But when you come before the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, we can't game the system. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam comes with full knowledge. He knows exactly what we did and why we did it and when we did it. So, as there was a Toyin in Eretz Yisrael, a Toyin Rabbani, he said he doesn't like to go to Bezdin to argue a case, a Choshen Mishpah case, in front of Rabbi Yoshua. Why? Rabbi Yoshua used to sit in his typical pose with his head down like this and just listen to what was happening. He says, the moment I started to shade something, he would look up and stare at me. He says, you know, I couldn't deal with that. But with the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, we can't shade anything. Part of the problem that we have, b'chlal, in everything that we do, is becoming focused on opportunity. I mean, the worst thing in life is to squander opportunity. The person Nebuch, there are some people that don't have opportunity in life, just didn't come their way for whatever reason. That's bad enough. But a person, the worst feeling in life was when a person had opportunity. It was in my hands. All I had to do was act upon it, do something with it, and I would have gotten someplace. But I let the ball slip out of my hands. It rolled away, and that's it. And the play didn't come back to me again. That's the most difficult feeling in life. So I think what B'Shamay tells us, Kiyomim HaNechnosim, talked last week that Chanukah didn't have Pesumei Nisa. There's an awareness of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. And an awareness is awareness in good times and awareness in bad times. They're related. We'll come back to that. But Dovid HaMelech says, Tzor V'yogon Emtzo, and Kos Yeshua says so. And both of them is B'Shem Hashem Ekro. He connects with HaKadosh Baruch in both. Here we're dealing the presence of the Rebbeinu Shel Olam in difficult times in the history of Klal Yisrael. And to connect with the Rebbeinu Shel Olam then. And we have two Yomim Tovim that are the Yomim Tovim of Golus in actuality. One was Golus was in Bavel, one was a Golus maybe even worse than Eretz Yisrael itself in the second bias. But the Yom Tovim of Golus, of Klal Yisrael's survival in the oppression that we will face throughout the Golus. And the light of Chanukah has fascinated Klal Yisrael. It's fascinated Klal Yisrael. It was once observed that it was the most widely observed Jewish holiday that existed, Chanukah. That more people observed lit neres Chanukah than did any other mitzvah in Klal Yisrael. There's something captivating about it. So B'Shamay tells us, keep note of the opportunity. We'll come to this in a little deeper sense in a moment. But first is the time to draw inspiration. There are 8 days left. There are 7 days left. There are 6 days left. The clock is winding down. Right. What is the Chazan intoned by Nila? Right. That Kivo Shemesh, right? Kifono Yoyim, the day has gone away. We started at Kol Nidre, and now the gates are closing. So the Chazan implores us to rise to the moment and race. When you come to the port, and they blow the horn, the boat's about to leave, and you have to get on, and you're still 25 feet away. So however tired you may be, and your energy is flagging, you give yourself a burst of adrenaline, and you race, and you jump onto the thing just as the guy closes the gate behind you. So that's the Chazan. The Chazan implores us on Yom Kippur that Kifon HaYom, the day is ending. Now or never. So that's Beshama, I think Beshama's message is Hanukkah. Something that goes on for 8 days. So, on one end, you're not in a rush. What's the rush? You know, Pesach, you have to show up. You know, the Seder's one night. After that, it's over. Here, if I don't tune in on night one, I have night two, night three, night four. I have eight nights to take care of what I need to be inspired. But Shammai says the perspective that a person has to have is what's slipping away. There are 8 nights left. There are 7 nights left. There are 6 nights left. The door is not open forever. We have to attach ourselves to it. And the particular light of Hanukkah will come back to it. We'll see what the urgency, the rush of it is. Beis Hillel comes from a different standpoint. And there's no question that Beis Shammai will agree with him. Keneged yomim hayeitzim. How great is the Nes? The Nes is greater and greater and greater and greater. So that we should emphasize that lesson with each passing day. So in the best of all worlds, Beis Shammai would agree. But we don't live in the best of all worlds. We don't always rise to the occasion. And what was the occasion? What do we need to rise to? I always come back to the Ramban. The Ramban fascinates me. In the beginning of Parshas Baloyscho, so this is a Rashi. Rashi wonders what's the smichas of Parshas of Baloyscho to the Chanukah Samazbeach, which was the end of Parshas Nosa. So Rashi tells us that the Chanukah Samazbeach. So Aaron was chol shadaito, he was despondent. Because not nor he nor his shevet had a chelek in the Chanukas HaMizbeach. So the Rebbeinu Shel Olam told them, Ba'alo yischo saneiro is shalachol godol mishalohen. So the Ramban says he doesn't quite understand what Aaron's issue was. If his issue was that he didn't dedicate the Mizbeach, he didn't bring a korban up to Chinuch HaMizbeach, so the menorah didn't change that. So why is he not despondent? And Elamai, he was happy because, listen, he has a shear in the Mishkan. He's not, you know, left out in the cold. So that's what made him happy. So then what was his problem in the first place? If that the answer is that you're not left out in the cold, you have a connection. No one could bring a korban. All the Nesiim couldn't bring their korbanos in the Mishkan to make the Chanukah. Without a kohen to be makriv with the korban, so why suddenly did he focus on the menorah? The whole Beis Hamidrash grinds to a halt without the kohen. So if you just want to be happy that you have a chelik in the Mishkan, so that's it. So you brought every korban. You had a kohen that was makriv every korban. So what are Chazal trying to get to? Why does the Rebbeinu Shlom tell him that the menorah is your compensation, and it's greater than you're theirs, and Aaron's happy with it? What did he need? What was the point that he made, which couldn't have been made by the fact that the whole Beis Hamikdash is dependent on the Kohen? Without the Kohen, they would close up. If Elliot and company don't show up, they go on strike, that's it. The Beis Hamikdash, we're out of business. Azor HaKorav, you must, you know. We can't touch anything in the Beis Hamikdash. The Kohen, that's it. They're the only ones that are licensed. So the Ramban tells us, he quotes a number of Midrashim, that what the Rebbeinu Shalom was telling Aaron HaKohen was not that he had a shir, that per se might not have been b'fayis, and that he had a shir, that he didn't participate in the chinuch HaMizbeach. But he told them that I'm going to give you a mitzvah which will transcend all the other mitzvahs which take place in the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash. And that is that locus saneris. Why? Because it says the Hadlokah Saneris is the only mitzvah of the Mikdash that has a zecher, a real zecher, throughout history. We haven't had a Beis HaMikdash in over 1900 years. But we're still kindling a menorah reminiscent of the menorah of the Mikdash. He says, so you will have the longest running, your mitzvah will be the longest running, the most enduring mitzvah of the Mishkan. And that was the pious that Aaron received. Not that he merely had a connection, but of all the mitzvahs, he has one mitzvah that no one else was given. And that mitzvah will be the most enduring of all the mitzvahs. So what always troubled me is, you know, we live in the age of the Guinness Book of Records. We have records for everything. You know, Chai is the biggest donut in the world, the biggest pizza in the world, Chai is whatever you want. The biggest and the longest and the, you know. He had the Mishagas of the Welt. Every Mishagas that somebody didn't think of. You think of a new Mishagas tomorrow and you make it into a record, you know. So they'll also put it in the book. So that's what Aaron HaKohen is about. I mean, we don't find records. We don't have record keeping. Keeping of records. Not in the Shas, not in the Chumash. It's not our thing. Not our thing. It's part of the ego-driven society in which we live in, that everyone has to be, yes, she's important, he did something, you know. But when a person lives by Tnei Alechas, these things aren't important. So the answer is, there's a drash that I heard as a child. I remember in Cheder, in elementary school, one of the, I don't even remember which Rebbe told it to us, but one of the Rebbeim told it to us. And many, many years later in my learning, I discovered that it's really the Netziv. I'm sure it's not original with the Netziv either. But the Netziv cites it in the beginning of Parshas Bala Yisro. Chazal tell us, Yish Chochmo Be'uma Is Tamen, Yish Torah Be'uma Is Al Tamen. If one says that in this non-Jewish world possesses great intellectual wisdom of all types of chochmah, tamen, believe it, it's true. Science and mathematics, and music and arts, aesthetics, all types of things, botany, all types of disciplines in the world. There's tremendous chochmah in the world. But if they tell you, yesh Torah b'umais, that they have any connection with the Rabbeinu Shalom's Torah, al tamen, it's untrue. We recognized and appreciated Chochmah. We were never once to dismiss Chochmah or be against Chochmah in the world. And from one standpoint, the six outer branches of the menorah represent all the Chochmah, all the Chochmah of this world. And what does the Torah tell us? All of those chokhmas, what's their ultimate purpose in this world? Their ultimate purpose is to be focused on the Torah, to enhance the light of the Torah. That's their ultimate purpose of all the chokhmah in the world. Yeah, we can use the mathematics to build a bridge, it's true, but we can use the mathematics to understand how to do Kiddush Levona. And that's its deepest purpose. The Chazon Ish Zecher Tzadik Livracha was a mathematical genius besides everything else that he was. Right, in his calculations on Kiddush HaChodesh, in his explanation of the Rambam throughout, and he answered the kashas that had remained for Doris on the Rambam that no one knew how to answer. So when he did the calculations, and he no longer needed the papers, because I guess he came to his final calculations, but he said the calculations have to be put into Sheamus, they can't be thrown in the garbage. Why? Because this mathematics became a chelik of Torah, because it was used for the purpose of understanding Torah directly. So these mathematical computations are Torah also, they have to be put into Sheamus, you can't throw them out. That's the ultimate goal of all chochmah in the world. It has many uses along the way, many secular uses, which are fun. But its ultimate purpose is el mul pnei ha-menorah, that it enhances our understanding and our grasp of Torah. That's what the Netziv says. That's the message of the menorah. And
did the Chazanish do calculations like our method of math?
The Chazanish, his trigonometry, you and I didn't learn in any place we went to school trigonometry. Half as sophisticated as what he used.
Was
that
with
the
math play? Like,
no, he didn't make it up. Listen, if you don't live in Bnei Brak, so you'll understand that. Okay, I won't say anymore. We'll leave it at that. Okay, listen, you know, he obviously put his head to the mathematics that he needed. And so we, let's put it this way, okay? Would we? I don't think anyone's going to come to claim that the Chazanish, you could say. If you want to say, you'll tell me he was as great a goyin as the Rabbi Sol Salanter, if you want. You're not going to come to tell me that he was greater than Rabbi Sol Salanter, who was the Godel Hador 100 years before. Rabbi Sol Salanter wrote a letter to one of his Talmidim in Germany, and he asked him for all types of books and all types of science and scientific disciplines that he needed, because he said books are relatively cheap in Germany, so you'll do me a favor if you can get me all of these type of books. Okay, so Mistavra from Rabbi Sol Salanter learned his myth and science from that. So Mistavra the Chazanish learned it in some fashion in that manner. It's not, you know, for me to speculate exactly how he did it. But his mathematics was a very, very, it was so sophisticated, his mathematics, that to understand it, there was a Professor Kallikstein, although he lived in this neighborhood, was a math professor at Queen's College. He wrote an entire sefer to explain the Chazanish's equations. Okay, a math professor had to write a book, a sefer, to explain that, to try to bring the Chazanish's calculations a little bit closer, you know, to most people with mathematical knowledge. That's how sophisticated his calculations were. Number two. The greatest, there's no question, the greatest artistic achievement of Klal Yisrael was the menorah. It's outclassed everything else that we did. And that was, in fact, that was why it was the symbol. It was the symbol of Klal Yisrael in the ancient world, and it's the symbol of Klal Yisrael in Medinas Yisrael today. Because it was our ultimate artistic accomplishment. Right? It was so difficult and so complex that Moshe Rabbeinu said, I can't understand it. Try to make it. The Rebbeinu Shalom showed it to him in a Mara Shalish, and he still couldn't make it. At the end, he threw it into Aish, and the Rebbeinu Shalom himself made it. Part of a significant clash. Remember, Yavon, Rabbi Yisai, is the root of Western culture. The root of Western culture. And they were sophisticated people. Sophisticated in math and in science and arts, many, many things. Very, very sophisticated. And this fall from their sophistication. If I asked anyone in this room, myself included, how I would determine how long a year is, I want to determine how long a year is. How would I determine it? So now, whatever answer I would come to by consultation with astronomers and physicists, etc., then suppose I tell you I'll take away all electricity and all modern equipment. You could only use equipment which was available 2 millennia ago. Now do it. Solve your problem. Rather daunting. How in the world, in a world that you can't even see most of it, you have no means of measuring it, are you going to determine how long a year is? And the Greek scientists figured out how to do it. They figured out how to do it. They understood the implications of shadows in different places, etc. And they would put something in a certain place and observe how long it took till the shadow was exactly the same again. And they knew, therefore, that the whole year had gone by because the Earth's relation to the sun was the same again. And they were quite accurate in their measuring of the year, with the use of pure chokhmah. Pure chokhmah. And they were pagans. They looked at, you know, the very deities is basically not much different than them, just more powerful, you know. If you live in Lebanon, there are warlords, you know. So you better get on with the warlords if you want to get on. But the warlord is not essentially different than you. He's just more powerful than you are. And in the pagan concept, the deities were not much different than that. They were more powerful than us, but they had the same pettiness and the same jealousies and squabbling and all the deficiencies that we had, just they were more powerful than we were. So you have to deal with them. But their notion, they understood this world in its own terms. the beauty, the aesthetics, the chochma. It's part of this world. And its significance is in terms of this world. Connecting with the Rabbeinu Shalom and whatever, that was not in their sphere. To see these connections with the Rabbeinu Shalom. It's chochma, mufshat, in its own right. In a very Western sense of what chochma is. Klal Yisrael's did not dispute the chochma of Yavon, but it said the chochma of Yavon ultimately should lead us to connect with the Rabbeinu Shalom. And that's where this was the ultimate philosophical bone of contention between us and Yavon. We have in the Mishkan, we have Lo'ilam Chazal tell us, Rashi quotes in Chumash Mois, Lo'ilam Te'odim Chosal Ayofa. A person should be concerned with aesthetics. Now we, the Mishkan and the Migdash were aesthetically very, very beautiful and majestic. That's what the Torah demands of us. But what was the tachlis of those aesthetics? To connect the person to the Rabbeinu Shalom. To connect the person with the Rabbeinu Shalom. That's the ultimate tachlis of all of them. Where does the Rabbeinu Shalom choose to make the Ness of Chanukah? He could have made the Ness any place. He could have put a behemoth on the pyre and it would have burned for 2 weeks. Well, don't give us an Ness. It had to be the menorah. It could have been anything. The Lechem upon him could have lasted for 2 months instead of for a week. But the Rabbeinu Shalom chooses as the instrument of the Ness, the Menorah. Why? Because the Menorah is the ultimate aesthetic expression of Klal Yisrael. And yet, what is the lesson of the Menorah? Al mul pnei ha-Menorah yirushu v'asaneris. The ultimate light of the Menorah, that's the light of Torah. Shas says so. That a roitzel ha-hachkim, if a person wishes to be gain and chokhmas ha-Torah, what should he do? He should tilt a little to the south as he davens. Boy, sheha menorah v'dor. The menorah represents chokhmah. It's well known in Chazal. The Masha talks about it in the Dorum, or in Nozer also, bo echad min ha-Dorum. The Masha also talks about it there. The menorah is the light of Torah. So what it said is, all the beauty is great, but what's its ultimate tachlis? To stress the primacy of Torah. Al mul pnei ha-menorah yirushu v'asaneris. Art, aesthetics, most important, beautiful in this world. But what's their ultimate point? Is to connect us to the Torah, to connect us to the Rabbeinu Shalom. So this is what Aaron HaKohen was zoicha to. Not merely that the mitzvah is we light the menorah, but the lighting of the menorah was to represent the illumination of the world. The illumination of the world with Torah. And that this was a triumph over Yavon, when internally we reached that point in the understanding of the primacy of Torah. And that's what the Rabbeinu Shalom tells Aaron HaKohen. Aaron, your mitzvah is to stress the primacy of Torah. That will go on. Your emphasis on the primacy of Torah will live in Klal Yisrael forever. They'll kindle the menorah in Chanukah, and Chanukah will again be to stress the primacy of Torah. And that was the pious, not merely because he had a mitzvah in the Mishkan wouldn't have been mefayasim. But he had a mitzvah which will continue to provide that illumination. And it's the illumination that's provided to Klal Yisrael. Right? I've often mentioned in the past, inside the Heichal of the Mishkan and the Migdash, there were four kelim, sachakel, that's it. Right? There was the Mizbeach HaKetores, the Mizbeach HaZov, that was in the outer portion of the Heichal. On the southern side of the Heichal was the menorah. On the northern side was the Lechem Aponim. And in the Kochim Kochim was the Arn. So the Lechem Aponim represents Parnosa. says Arutz Lahasher is Yatzpin, face towards the Lechem Aponim. That's a brocha be'isa. That's a brocha in our business endeavors. The Menorah is Chochmas HaTorah. The Aron is also known. The Aron is the held the Luchos, held the Sefer Torah Shel Hazor. The Aron also represents Torah. So is it not peculiar that of the four Kalim inside the building of the Mishkan or of the Migdash, two of them, no less, had to represent Torah? One wasn't enough. And beyond that, strangely enough, one of them is in the Kodesh, the Heichal, and one is in the Kotcha Kotcha. Sinai. Well, I need two, and I need one in the Kodesh and one in the Kodesh Kadosh. So I've often mentioned in the past, there are two dimensions of Torah. There's Lulmoy, the Lulamit. The learning of Torah has to be done in the greatest Kedusha that's possible. You have to build a kotchim kotchim around it, that it should be with absolute Torah. It should not be distorted in the least, or influenced by anything else. That's for the Talmud Chacham, that's Oisik B'Torah B'Fnim. He's Oisik in the Rebbeinu Shalom's Torah, and it's Dalet Amos. But then there's the Torah that's Lahor, to bring light to Klal Yisrael. That can't be confined. What did Shmuel HaNavi do? Shmuel HaNavi, it says, went. He went on the road. And he traveled throughout the length and breadth of Eretz Yisrael to inspire the people. He didn't sit in Yerushalayim and wait for them to come to him. Shmuel was on the road. Traveled throughout Eretz Yisrael. Went all over to inspire the people. We can't lock the Torah away from Klal Yisrael. We have to bring the Torah to Klal Yisrael. Wherever Klal Yisrael is, that's where we have to bring it. It can't be locked away in the Kotcha Kotchim that only the Kohen Gadol could come to once a year. And that's the Torah Lahor. That's the Torah that brings light, that illuminates Klal Yisrael. That can't be in the Kotcha Kotchim. That's out of the world. That's visible and accessible to everyone. So this was the Ashpo of the Menorah. This was the mitzvah that the Rabbeinu Shalom gave to Aaron HaKohen. That mitzvah to illuminate, to bring this understanding to Klal Yisrael. But if you look even another step, to something else that we could do. It goes further than that. The Arizal. Let's take a step back. Let's start from here. Reb Chaim Volozhin, we'll start with a Litvak. Reb Chaim Volozhin says that if you want to know if your Torah is true, you said you have Chiddush Torah. Is your Chiddush Torah true or not true? So the only way to know, ultimately, is if you master Kabbalah too. And if your insights are correct according to Kabbalah as well, then you know you hit the Emes. That's the only way to know that you hit the truth. Why? Because the Nigla and the Nistar coincide. And this is a famous teaching of the Vilna Gaon, that part that they coincide. There's a whole literature in Achronim, I think the Chofetz Chaim quoted in Siman Chof Hei. What do we do if there's a stira between the Gemara and the Zoya? How do we paskin? So basically the Paiskim generally agree, overwhelmingly, that the Halacha follows the Shas and not the Zoya. Along came the Vilna Gaon, and the Vilna Gaon said it's a very nice machlekes, but the whole thing is nishnogei lemaisa. Why? Because the Gaon said, because there are no stiras between the Shas and the Zoya. Now, when you realize that the Vilna Gaon was the supermaster of Shas, and he was the supermaster of Kabbalah. So that means the Gaon is not telling us a theory, the Gaon is telling us, I learned the whole Shas, I learned all the Sifrei Kabbalah, and it all fits exactly. There are no contradictions between them. Meaning to say, if we perceive a contradiction, so one of three things happened. Either we learn wrong pshat in the Gemara, wrong pshat in the Zoya, or wrong pshat in both. But, you know, but the Gaon has made it for us that there were no contradictions between them. And that's in effect what Rabbi Sol Salanter, Rabbi Chaim Volozhin said. That you see that the Torah Sanigla and the Torah Sanista come to the same thing. then you know you're on the right track. There cannot be a divergence between them. Now we find, it's very interesting, there's a notion that Chachmei Kabbalah came to, and that Chachmei HaMusar came to, from two different standpoints, but they unite both of these, the Nigla and the Nista. But we saw how Salanta said that there are two aspects to the chizuk that we get from Torah. One is a general chizuk. If I learn Torah, it strengthens me spiritually. Torah is mekadosh the person. Now that makes no difference in that regard. I could learn, say, the Tyrus, I'll learn Kalim. But after learning Kalim, I'll be a better Shem Shabbos. Because I have greater sanctity in my neshama. He says, but a more direct means of doing it is to learn Hilchos Shabbos. And if you learn Hilchos Shabbos, then you're addressing yourself more head on. And we found that in Chachmei HaMusar would sometimes take a posik. They nobody would have an Isayur and Gaiva, and they would do Toyev As Hashem Kol Gvalei. They could do 1,000 times to strengthen themselves that they shouldn't be Nichshol in the Isayur of Gaiva. Chachmei HaKabbalah, I believe they bring in the name of the Arizal, if I recall correctly, say that every posik in the Tanakh is a skula, means gives a special strength to help fulfill that posik. So you read the posik, it was Risa, so it was Chartem, it was called Mitzvah Hashem. So Tzitzis, that posik in Tzitzis, if that's what's in that posik, that gives you a koyach to fulfill the mitzvah of that posik. And that's a spiritual thing. It's not the Chachmei HaMusar we're dealing more on a psychological level, that I've strengthened myself, I've fortified my personality not to be swayed. And Chachmei HaKabbalah tell us that in the Kabbalah realm, every posik in the Torah is a skula to be mekayim, the din of that posik. So those two overlap. So in the same is true here. On one hand, we note on Chanukah, Homul Panei Menorah Yerusha Masaleros. That is a statement, an intellectual statement about the primacy of Torah. And that's what Klal Yisrael is about, and that's how we're going to survive. But we also have the standpoint brought from Chachmei HaKabbalah that within the mitzvah that we do, and the zman of a particular mitzvah, the oir of that mitzvah is accessible in the world. It's a Kabbalistic notion. It means if the ness of the menorah stressed the primacy of Torah, that means there's an accessibility to connecting with that uplifting sense of the Chashivas HaTorah, especially in the days of Chanukah. And that perhaps, we're coming back, we'll come full cycle, we come back to Beis Shammai now. That's why Beis Shammai is so concerned. Kineged Hayomim HaNichnosim. How many days are left? Times are wasting. Are we going to remember to get there or not? Because this is our survival. There's no other way we're going to survive. What does Yaakov Avinu do? When Yaakov Avinu leaves his father's house, he was at the tender age of 63 years old. And at that tender age, so he goes off, and he's running to the house of Lavan to get married, right? So Chazal say he disappeared for 14 years on the way. What happened? He went to Eivor to learn. So Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky asked, what did he run to Eivor for? I mean, he was 63 years old, he hadn't stepped out of the doors of the yeshiva, he was going to get married. So what in the world did he stop in Eivor, by shame of Eivor, for another 14 years on the way? What was the point of it? So he says, the point of it is, Torah gives us, there are different aspects to Torah. There's an aspect of Torah where one is b'mei menucha, but I'm sitting alad masakodesh, and the world around is in harmony with what I believe. That's one Torah. There's another Torah which stresses how to survive in this world when we're not in harmony with the world, when the world around us is hostile. That's also in Torah, but that takes a special emphasis. That takes a special emphasis. That was really the rise of Mussar and Hasidus was really for that particular message. When dissonance between us and the world around us reached a certain point, we had to learn how to strike back and how to survive those movements, those philosophies which started to permeate Klal Yisrael. So Yaakov Avinu had to learn. Yitzchak also had. He had all the following of Avram Avinu around him. He had Gerim around him. He had a community around him. Ava did not form a community, Shem Ava. You came and you learned there for a while, and then you went back home, and you lived on your own. So you had to come out of Shem Ava knowing how to get on with your own wits in the world around you. That's what they stressed, that Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky said. So Hanukkah represents our striving to survive in a hostile world. When the world outside is philosophically at odds with us, we feel tremendous dissonance. I mean, increasingly, there's no question, we feel much more dissonance now than we felt 50 years ago or our forefathers felt 70 or 80 years ago. I mean, the secular world has diverged from us in such a sharp way that we live with tremendous dissonance. You know, they don't. Our sense of morality is not their sense of morality. What's Yoishah by us is by them rishis. What's rishis by them, what's Yoishah by them is rishis by us. We're not on the same page. Bechlau. There's no pretense of being on the same page. Is that Torah of Hanukkah, the Torah which gave us the strength to withstand Yovam? It's we can be zeicha to that Torah in Yimei Hanukkah through the Oyer of Hanukkah. Give us the strength to survive all the vicissitudes of the Golos. Afreilich HaChanukah Rabbi Yisrael.